Okay, this is another one of our series of the laws of life, which we explore the divine laws as enumerated by D.K. in the Alice Bailey books. Our topic tonight is inevitability. And the question is, what is the divine law of inevitability, and how can aspirants best harness it? I've shuffled the cards and laid them out, and you can see the result on your screen if you happen to have a screen. The starting point is the Two of Pentacles, upright. The counterpoint is the Chariot, upside down. The the Chariot is number 7 in the Major Arcana. The challenge is the Two of Rods upside down. The purpose is the 7 of Swords upside down. The endowment is the 2 of Cups, right side up. The destiny is the 10 of Cups, right side up. Then we have the Pillar of Revelation. The real question is the 4 of Rods upside down. The unseen forces, the Tower, right side up, number 16, which also means it's a 7. So we have the Chariot, number 7, and the Tower, number 16, which is a 7, from the Major Arcana. The spiritual ideal is the 4 of Cups, right side up, and the culmination or fulfillment is the 3 of Swords, right side up. So we have 6 upright cards, 4 reverse cards, 2 majors, 2 swords, 2 rods, 3 cups, and 1 pentacle. We almost had a 2-2-2-2-2 split, which I don't recall ever seeing, but we didn't quite make it. So, interesting thing here is we have 3 twos, all right there in one little corner. The 2 of Pentacles, the 2 of Cups, and the 2 of Rods. So I think we can conclude from that that duality is going to be very important in understanding this. Duality is what obscures us from seeing the inevitability of things. But it also is the key to helping us see the inevitability of things. We'll get to that in a moment. And then we also have the 3 sevens, the 7 of Swords, the 7 of the Major Arcana, the Chariot, and then the Tower. We have 2 fours, the 4 of Rods and the 4 of Cups, both in the Pillar of Revelation. So we have a lot of dynamic tension going on here. So in a very real way, this question leads us into there's nothing all that direct applicable to the physical plane here, except that all the laws of life govern the physical plane in our daily life. But what this does is it opens a doorway to the abstract, and hence it's extremely important. And in a very real sense, the law of inevitability governs or speaks to the way all laws govern physical life. They are inevitable. They are difficult to see in the physical plane, but once you understand them abstractly, you recognize their inevitability. So let's examine this a little bit more and see what we can come up with. Going to the starting point, we have the Two of Pentacles. It's a woman with a light pink hat on, standing in front of the ocean. And she's looking at two pentacles yoked together by the sign of infinity. And we'll see that sign of infinity again over here in the Two of Cups, if you think about looking straight down on the two cups touching each other. Her cloak is joined by the interlacing of her ties there, which is a symbol of conflict. There's other symbols of conflict in this. But the important thing here is that the ocean in the background represents the force involved in this, and that divine force, divine will, is inevitable. That's just a flat-out statement that we can make. Divine force is inevitable. And so, this prints out then in terms of our understanding of duality. Duality is the way in which divine force splits into manifestation and counter-manifestation as it incarnates, if you wish. The human soul chooses either male or female, and there's our duality. But any divine force splits into the yin and the yang. Wherever the yin is present, it leads to the yang. Wherever the yang is present, it leads to the yin. And that's the underlying beauty of the whole system of duality. The one opposite creates the opposite opposite. And together, you can only tap the real power of them by working with them together. And so in the I Ching, as you remember, the idea is that you can go to one extreme, but it always implies the opposite extreme. There's a constant movement back and forth. And that's just nature. That's just the way divine force works here on Earth. And so the wise person learns to look for this vacillation, oscillation, back and forth from yin to yang and back again. And that's inevitable. Wherever you have yin, yang becomes inevitable. Wherever you have something hot, something cold becomes inevitable. That which is hot can only cool down once it's reached its epitome of heat. It can only cool down. That which is cold, once it's reached the nadir of coldness, can only become hot again. The more we understand this and the inevitability of this movement back and forth, the more we can make sense of life around us. And winning leads inevitably to losing. Losing leads inevitably to winning. Difficulty leads inevitably to solutions and back and forth again. So we need to see that this is tonight we're almost dealing in an exercise in truisms. It's almost a platitude. It's so blatantly obvious that if you have one end of a duality, the other end is inevitable. Wherever you can't separate them. This is in the law of inevitability says there is no separation. Now, of course, here on Earth, we know that that's not true because we see separation all over the place, except that that is a false perception. It's a glamour. It's a glamorous separation, because in fact we are never separated from our divine essence. We would be dead if we were separated from our divine essence. And our divine essence is never separated from us, except in the most rare extreme cases. So the interesting thing about the Two of Pentacles is the water in the background. First of all, we're looking at the capacity to individualize the ocean of life in a person, creating a duality. But the water is tremendous power, tremendous force. And so there's great momentum. And the real interesting thing about the law of inevitability is momentum. Once divine creation builds a certain momentum, it inevitability is inescapable. And that's the first thing we need to understand about divine life. It is inevitable. The will of God is inevitable. So instead of fighting the will of God, instead of trying to come up with our own personal will and beating against the doors, the gates of heaven and saying, how dare you treat me this way, the best thing for any human being or any conscious being to do is to accept the inevitability of the larger life in which we live. It's inevitable. We can't change it. We can make choices eventually, but We can't change it. And the more we fight against and struggle with inevitability, the more we create stress and strain. We make life unpleasant for ourselves. It's fighting City Hall, except in this case, it's not City Hall, it's God. Now, one of the real keys here is that eventually, once we learn how to harness the forces of equilibrium and balance, and we understand the law of inevitability, we get to the point where we're able to make intelligent choices, and we understand that whatever choice we make, we're responding to a divine impulse. We are here because of the divine impulse. I suppose one way of expressing it is that wherever darkness exists, light becomes inevitable. Think about that. Wherever darkness prevails, light becomes inevitable. It doesn't necessarily become inevitable tomorrow or the next day, and we get all bent out of shape because of the finiteness of time and saying, we want it now. We want it now. And now doesn't exist in divine language. So, but nonetheless, wherever darkness exists, light becomes inevitable. And in fact, in the Divine Healing of Mind and Body, the Christ talks about the friendly darkness that serves as a womb in which light is able to develop, and then eventually light eliminates the darkness. If we view that as our constant enemy, as Satan, then we can create all kinds of demons that will pester us and annoy us no end, but they're of our own creation. We need to understand that if we're trying to cultivate the light and become enlightened, we need a certain amount of darkness in order to do that. We need to seek out the darkness and eliminate it. We start by seeking it out within ourselves. But that growth is inevitable. The old cliche, of course, is nothing is certain except death and taxes. And since 50% of the country doesn't pay taxes anymore, it doesn't seem to apply there. Nothing is certain except death and a corrupt Senate, a corrupt Congress that eliminates taxes for people they want to vote for them. The real thing is that nothing is certain except, or nothing is inevitable except growth and achievement. That's the will of God. You could also say nothing is certain except growth and light. Those are the two biggies here, you see. Light is going to triumph over the darkness. It's God's plan. It's inevitable. Now, the problem is, you see, once we get up to the fourth, fifth, sixth initiation, which we're all striving for, it's not that far away, just a few lifetimes. Once we get up to the fourth, fifth, sixth initiation, we figure this out. We figure that it's no big deal. It's, yeah, Jesus wasn't crazy about being crucified, but since it was his Father's will, it was all right. You know? I'll do it. Yeah, you can count on me. And the point is that at that stage, you figure out that the lessons don't threaten you in any way. Right now, at the current state of growth, there's a lot about the next few steps in growth that probably scare the bejesus out of you, at least to some degree. Or we strain too much. We overestimate the pain and struggle and say, oh, I'm not sure I really want to become a master. And yet mastery is inevitable because that's the end result of growth. Okay, this is the law of inevitability. What I'm trying to say is You can't see too much evidence of it in the physical plane, but it's coming our way. But it explains almost everything about the abstract levels of life. So the best way to look at the Two of Pentacles is to understand that this is the inner and the outer. After all, that's the sign of infinity. So right from the beginning, this is defining the law of inevitability as abstract. And so we need to view it in terms of how the abstract elements of life enrich our life and can guide us in our development of wisdom. The ocean provides the momentum. We figure out how to build a craft and ride the waves, surf the waves. This then leads to the Chariot, which is our counterpoint. This appeared in the last reading as the endowment, the last tarot. As the Two of Rods also appeared, that was the Two of Rods
Three of
didn't
swords.
Appear. The
Three of Swords.
Three of Swords also appeared as the real question. The Two of Rods appeared two times ago in the Law of Synthesis. The Chariot is number seven in the Major Arcana. And the key factor here, I think, is the happy face and the sad face, the two masks of tragedy and comedy. And, of course, there is the five-pointed star at the Ajna and that pattern of horizontal lines indicating a certain level of stagnation or stasis. And the Chariot has these two faces, and this tells us that grimness leads inexorably to joy. Hate leads inevitably to love. It may take thousands of years and many, many bitter lessons to get there, but wherever you have any of that ancient residue of evil that is down there in the middle of the Chariot, supplying the fuel, you have a duality going on from yin to yang, where the negative is drawing in and cultivating, helping you cultivate the spiritual force that will eliminate it. So separation leads inevitably to unity. That's going to be a big theme throughout the reading here, our investigation. And in fact, the Chariot, or this whole question of the law of inevitability, becomes the door to perfection. The inevitable result of human growth is perfection. Mastery first, and then perfection. Mastery occurs at the level of the fifth initiation. Perfection occurs at the level of the sixth or seventh initiation, at which point the initiate gets a whole new doorway opening up in which they gain the freedom of the cosmos. They become apprentice gods. And they start working with cosmic forces in a most profound way. That's not our concern. It's just that when you weigh it in the balance, there's very little of life here on Earth. 99.9% of all the possibilities and divine opportunities lie at the abstract level, because that's where spirit is. We have the opportunity to bring spirit down and transform the finite, the material, and the limited into something more eternal. And that's a great opportunity, and we can pursue many fertile lifetimes doing it. But the real opportunity lies in our inner potential for perfection. That's what is inevitable. That's what the law of inevitability draws us toward. That's why we have a natural response to spirit. Most of us manage to to ignore it very well, but not those of us taking this series of Tarots, not those working with meditation. We're trying to reduce the gap. We're trying to eliminate the separation between us and the soul, us and God. Now, in this context, we have the key to understanding karma. And it's a very simple principle. I've enunciated it before, but maybe not as clearly as I can in this situation. And that is that if you sell drugs to other people, the karma of that is you take on the responsibility to help people from that point on, especially the people that you've harmed, overcome their addiction to drugs. And you'll probably do that by becoming addicted yourself, if you don't already while you're selling the drugs. But if you manage to avoid that, you'll be born into several lives in which your mother was addicted, you grow up with an innate addiction to drugs, you can't escape it. And then ensues a series of lives in which you gradually become useful in helping others escape the burden of addiction. All right, that's a simple example. This is not imposed by the lords of karma. This is simply the law of inevitability. When you do anything that is intrudes on the free will and consciousness of another person, you take on the responsibility to correct that problem. Inevitable. If you cheat, you take on the inevitable responsibility to overcome cheating and cultivate honesty and reward honesty. If you brainwash other people, you take on the responsibility of fighting brainwashing in the future. Whatever it is, this is not a punishment. This is just as obvious as if you stick your hand in the fire, it burns. You stick your hand in a burning fire, inevitably you're going to burn unless you take your hand back out. You go out and lay in the sun for 5 hours, when you don't have a good solid tan, you're going to get a sunburn. It's inevitable. It's not a punishment. It probably feels like it that night when you're burning up in bed. It's not a punishment. It's just the inevitable result of your silliness and stupidity. So these this is the way these principles work. The law of inevitability is, in one facet, the law of karma. Our actions make it inevitable what's going to happen tomorrow. And we have to understand that. So I can give you thousands of other examples, like the drug issue, but we create our own pathway. Now, where the law of inevitability comes in is that when you do reach the sixth initiation or whatever, and you are capable of looking back on the long series of lives, and you look back on the fact that you've won the equivalent of the Nobel Peace Prize a couple of times in your later lives because of your valiant work at eliminating addiction throughout the world, you go all the way back and you realize the only reason why you chose that path was because you sold drugs 10,000 lifetimes ago, 500 lifetimes ago. All right? So it's not something that's imposed upon you. But when the doorway to perfection opens up and you have legitimate choices to make as to what road you're going to pursue, you're going to realize that all along, everything that you thought was your decision was a response, intelligent or foolish, to the impelling momentum and guidance of the soul, which was responding to higher elements of monadic life and so on. the law of inevitability is that nothing happens by accident or coincidence down here. We are responding to the soul's plan, God's plan for our life, either intelligently or stupidly. Now, I would say that if you cut out, if you went straight from the temptation to sell drugs to a strong revulsion to that, you could eliminate a whole lot of needless suffering and strain by responding to the ideal pattern to begin with. But we often need that kind of tempering and conditioning, even though it brings great suffering with it. And again, that the lesson to be learned here is that if you work intelligently with the law of inevitability, you can speed up, you can accelerate your growth very much. You can cut out the unnecessary suffering and strain. All right. Going on to the third card then, we have the Two of Rods. And the Two of Rods is, a fellow wearing rod-type clothing, holding a globe, a pink globe, and holding a rod in one hand, and the other rod is standing out there. He's contemplating the duality of the two rods and the wholeness of the circle. So this brings in the essence or the idea that duality only exists within the context of wholeness. The yin and the yang are depicted as perfectly balanced halves of a whole, but in motion. They're not just split right down the middle. It's a curved line that allows there to be a little bit of the other one in the middle of its essence. So, duality leads to wholeness. The two become as one. The laws of life are therefore inevitable. We can scorn the law of gravity, we can stand on top of a tall building and laugh and jump off, but we will end up splatted and flatted in spite of our belief to the contrary. The law of gravity will not be mocked. Any of these laws of life work in this way. They are all inevitable forces in our life. The sooner we learn to cooperate with them, the sooner we learn to depict them in their wholeness, the better off we will be. So the first thing, or I guess not the first thing because it's the third card, but one of the first lessons we need to learn about working with the law of inevitability is that inevitability is a force that compels a response. I've already said that point, but it bears repetition in this context, that you can't work with wholeness without recognizing the two elements that fight each other within that wholeness. And you need to learn to work to balance them and achieve equilibrium so that you have a stress-less response to the larger pattern of perfection, meaning you can work with both sides of the aisle, so to speak. This is the virtue of wholeness. In the abstract, only wholeness exists. Only perfection exists. Duality is a principle that is in operation only in the physical plane. So the idea here is that while we have to deal with the two opposing rods, we are perfectly capable of and allowed, it is totally permitted, in fact it's encouraged, to contemplate wholeness. This is the basis of my famous equilateral triangle, where you have the pairs of opposites at either end of the baseline, and then you find the culmination or the apex that harmonizes both ends. That's the picture of wholeness. That's perfection. That's the archetypal pattern. So we must train the mind to work in this way to embrace wholeness, embrace perfection. And in that, we shorten the distance between here and inevitability. Coming down to the Seven of Swords, we have a fellow, we see the back of him. There's that pattern, chevron pattern of conflict again. So he's busy in the world. But he has seven swords, but he's only carrying five of them. He's made a choice. He's limited his focus. He recognizes he can't do it all at once. And this is a card of choice, of discerning choice. The Two of Rods that we just talked about is the discernment of the abstract ideal, the archetype. Here, the individual is deciding which of the five of the seven forces of the abstract ideal he's going to carry with him and try to implement, and which ones he leaves for another time. It's choice. We aren't expected to do all things for God at once. We have our path. We want to understand what that path is and follow it as truly and faithfully as we can. But in doing that, we establish a pattern or a memory bank, a trail, if you wish, a spiritual path, that defines how we're going to serve God. And this becomes inevitable. And again, it's what we do today dictates what happens tomorrow. What we do today may involve a confrontation with problems left over from the past. That's karma. But what we do today sets in motion what we do tomorrow and 10 years from now and 10 lifetimes from now. And it all has to be in the context of the inevitability here. Did I mention the Pearl of Great Price? The idea here is that the Christ talked about the Pearl of Great, heaven is like a pearl of great price, that you willingly sell everything you have in order to purchase this pearl. All right. So inevitability is that spirit has that sense of inevitability, that the attraction of spirit is so strong, eventually we get to the point where that is our sole concern. We're willing to sacrifice everything else in order to achieve the kingdom of heaven. This then brings us to the endowment, the Two of Cups. And we have a male and a female. This is the first time now that the duality has been expressed in maleness and femaleness, but we'll see it again in the next card, the card of destiny. So these two go together. And the male and the female are pledging their troth or their admiration or whatever with, you know, a little nectar, a little champagne, whatever it might be. And again, they're discovering, through joining the male and the female, they're discovering the secret of unity, of union, of the two become as one. This allows them to escape from the finite into the abstract. The abstract is represented here, again, by the symbol of infinity created by the tops of the rims of their cups. So this card represents escape from the finite into the abstract. And it's basically saying that this is so fundamental to human life, it is inevitable. It's part of, this is the whole reason why we came, why we began incarnating here on Earth, plunging ourselves into darkness, into materialism, is so that we can grow and mature and develop the mind and our consciousness so that suddenly we look upward and recognize there's a whole other dimension, the dimension of the infinite, the eternal, the abstract. It's totally different from the finite. So we escape from the finite. We still live here, but we're no longer enslaved by the finite, by form, by fear of dying, etc. And we escape into the abstract realms. And from that point on, the mind can start working at abstract levels. And that becomes the source of inspiration, creativity, and enrichment. Okay, that's fairly profound, I think. Then it leads us on to the card of destiny, the Ten of Cups. And this again, the Ten of Cups is the tenth card in the emotional suit of cups. And it represents the achievement of perfection in working with the quality of life, not just the emotions, but here the Buddhic quality. As we discover how to unite the pairs of opposites and achieve equilibrium, we touch the secret of harmony, of peace, of all the different treasures and fruits of spirit. We are rewarded by unity. But this has a very practical, pragmatic aspect to it as well. And that is that as we do this, we start to develop empathy. Empathy for the opposite. Empathy for other people. We seek companionship. We learn the value of companionship. Soon we begin to seek the companionship of the soul. And then the soul seeks the companionship of the monad. We as individuals and as a race begin to seek the companionship of God. Now, not everybody's on board with that. There are atheists, there are doubters, there are skeptics. Doesn't matter. They are seeking the companionship of God even though they don't know it. And in their bumbling, foolish attempt to make sense of life, they sometimes reject what the very thing that they're seeking. But because of the inevitability of the design of human evolution, it doesn't matter. It's inevitable that we will become companions with God. God decreed it, it'll happen. It's inevitable. It's this law that determines that, and it's this law that we can use to make sense. So as we develop our empathy for other people, learn to forgive, we learn that we can draw to us the people that we can cooperate with and they can cooperate with us. And this connection becomes stronger and stronger until we discover that our use of the magnetic love can draw to us any conditions we need in order to achieve our basic goal. This is very much like in the book Eureka by Edgar Allan Poe. If you haven't got that in your library and read it several times, I recommend it. Eureka, he is his vision of cosmology, and he talks about the center exploding and radiating outward to its outermost extent and then turning around and coming back toward. All right. As we use empathy to draw other people to us, we're drawing the outer boundaries of our experience into us and learning to cooperate with it, learning to act in companionship with it. So this is a very important lesson, which lets us eventually be able to do this on a much larger scale as an apprentice gone. Then we come to the pillar of revelation. And our first card here is the Four of Rods. Four of Rods is a symbol of celebration, a festival, whatever, rejoicing. symbolism here is of a marriage ceremony, with the vision of the castle in the background across the river. So this is a card that depicts joyful balance, joyful equilibrium. Everything's nicely framed. We see our goal. We're not there, but we are rejoicing that we're approaching the goal. And everything's in flower, and there's fulfillment here. So this is a card that implies equilibrium, harmony, celebration, fulfillment. So the question becomes that in whatever we're contemplating, we should ask ourselves, what is the inevitable outcome of my proposed action? If you have a choice to make, you should ask the question, what is the inevitable outcome of making this choice, of this decision, that decision, this decision over here? This is an intelligent framework for making decisions in life. You ask, and it puts the law of inevitability to work. If I make this decision, what will be the inevitable outcome of that? Now, we're not likely to be able to understand that, but we should think of it in those terms. And eventually we begin to understand that the inevitable decision that we have to make is going to be most favorable to us if we see the inevitability of serving God. If we pursue advantage on the physical plane or wealth on the physical plane, then we're postponing. The inevitable reaction is we're postponing us another line that would help us more. We'll still get there, but we're postponing the inevitable. So this card is a statement put in here. It's very, very much like my frequent admonition to invoke the ideal. You're not sure what to do? Invoke the ideal. The ideal force contains inevitability. It will express the law of inevitability. So by invoking the ideal outcome, what's best for everybody, you become a force working in favor of inevitability. This is a divine law, so why not take advantage of it? Why not ask God to grant what he already intends to grant? This is the essence of the Christ in the Garden of Gethsemane saying, "Thy will, not mine, be done." If I had my druthers, I'd just as soon not go through with the crucifixion. I don't think anybody would disagree with that outcome. But he said, hey, if this is part of your plan, let's get it over with. Let's get on with it. Let's demonstrate what I'm here to demonstrate. And he understood that. So it's what is the inevitable outcome of what I'm proposing to do? And is there a more ideal way of doing that? The simple meditative technique of invoking the ideal in any situation, from simple to complex, is good training for learning to work with the law of inevitability. Okay, then we go on to unseen forces, the tower. And this is probably the most interesting card in the whole spread. The tower, of course, is just a solitary tower stretching up to heaven, being hit by lightning from heaven. A fire is started in the upper turret. Down below, the waves of a fierce hurricane or tempest or whatever it is are lashing against the foundation, but it's strong, it stays there, stands there. This is a card of initiation. Of course, I can hear some of you thinking in your head, well, that's initiation. I don't want anything to do with it. That looks like crucifixion, not initiation. Well, crucifixion is one of the initiations. Nonetheless, the this is initiation in the sense of Moses leading his people out of Egypt and coming up to whichever sea it was, the Dead Sea, the Red Sea, the Fred Sea, whatever it is. And the Egyptian horde is hot on their trail, and there's this big expanse of water, and he opens up, you know, he takes his arms and parts the waves, and the waves respond. Keep in mind that inevitability is a force that compels a response. So he was put into a situation where it was inevitable he had to make a decision. Either you allow the Egyptians to come in and slaughter your people, or capture them and take them back to slavery, or you figure out how to part the waves. That's necessity. A response was required. So, there was a certain inevitability about that, the inevitability being that he had to part the waves. Well, that's an example. That's an example of the need to open up a new gateway in your consciousness. It's just like in Light and Night, Parmenides talks about riding a chariot up to the gate of truth, and then he had to prove his worthiness and go through that gate of truth. And when he did, then the abstract realm of thinking was revealed to him. Okay. So this is the opening of a gate in consciousness. One of the things that we don't comprehend very well here in the finite world, the finite plane, and of course the atheists and unbelievers don't comprehend it at all, is that there are a sequence of stimulations applied to the human consciousness as growth occurs that open up new possibilities that never existed before. We call those esoterically initiations. That's the tower. To the average person, it never seems like a very pleasant situation, but it occurs because there's a crisis. There is a need to escape from the finite into the abstract, not as a fantasy, but in order to bring down greater power. So this is a card that says, follow the light. You know, there's the old cliche, follow the money. Well, that works on the physical plane, and if you're looking for a culprit, you follow the money trail. But here, we want to adapt that to be follow the light. Let the light draw you from the finite into the abstract. Let the light draw you up to the turret of the tower, out of the dungeons and up to the turret, so that you are then responsive to the stimulation of the soul. The law of inevitability governs the growth of the individual human. It is inevitable that as we grow and discover spirit, it begins to seep into our life and eventually pour into our life and open up whole new apertures to heaven. This is not something that we initiate except to the degree that we grow. And we hope and we pray for illumination. But when the illumination comes, it comes from the soul. It comes from spirit. Not because of what we've done, but certainly as a result of our aspiration. And so we leave the separated illusion of earth, and we become at one with spirit, which illuminates us. Now, that doesn't mean that we leave our earthly body behind and become an angel or something. We of course, awaken the next morning and we're still in our physical body, but we have a new sense of understanding. And we have a new capacity at the mental level to explore the mind of God and the archetypes and the laws of life. And the more we take advantage of that invitation, the more we prepare ourselves for initiation, for this stimulation of human consciousness. This is part of the symbolic mystery of grace, that God gives you grace, and the idea here is that only divine life can stimulate an initiation. We can pray for it, and if we're not ready, our prayers will go unanswered. We can prepare for it, but until our preparations are complete, our efforts seem to go for naught. But the day comes when, or the time comes when initiation is right and proper, and so there's this inevitable stimulation. This is not something that, now let me put it this way. I would imagine that if I put this into a book and thousands of people read it over the next 100 years or something, most of those people would, because of the fact that they were Catholic and have a bad self-image, would say, well, it would be just my luck that when I'm ready to be initiated, God shuts it down. I won't get initiated. Maybe somebody else will. But or that's what they did back in the days of the prophets, but God has stopped initiating people. Well, that's hooey. That's nonsense. That's the finite thinking at its worst. The law of inevitability is that we are designed to grow and mature and develop our skills, learn and master human life, achieve perfection, and then whole new doors open up that allow us the freedom of the cosmos, universal freedom. And that's something that DK hints at occasionally, but this is the law of inevitability that guarantees that will happen. And that this is a good and noble process that has been the intent of creation ever since the get-go. That's a little-known secret that most people don't know, but God first created the gecko, and then all of creation followed. You didn't know that, did you? Anyway, now we go on to the next card, which is the Four of Cups. The Four of Cups is very much in the same thing. This is a spiritual ideal. Here we have our aspirant sitting there, kind of drugged out of his mind, and the three cups on the ground, tree growing out of the guy's head, and the cloud of heaven, the cloud of knowable things, a hand is reaching down and adding a cup, or pouring ambrosia and nectar or whatever into the cups so you can drink. Well, this is, again, our basic theme. As we eliminate the illusion of separation between ourselves and heaven, as we understand what it means to be at one with God, then the cups, the vessels of the mind, emotion, and physical body will be filled on a regular basis with the treasure of heaven, with the liquor of heaven, with the living waters of the Christ. This will be an automatic process. We don't have to ask for it. It happens at unconscious levels. It's just that our vessels, our willingness to serve, are filled and refilled on a regular basis for us by our higher self, by the soul. It's inevitable. We can never exhaust heaven, because heaven is abstract, eternal, infinite. You cannot fill your heart with too much love. You cannot fill your mind with too much wisdom. It's constantly being replenished, these forces, as we develop this working relationship between heaven and earth, between the soul and the personality. A companionship. This is meant to be a genuine companionship. As I express love to others, the soul fills my vessel with love so that I can express more. As I enlighten other people or enlighten mass consciousness, and I'm just using the word I symbolically here, I'm not talking about me, myself, and I, but as any individual enlightens humanity around them, they are given greater access to wisdom. The law of inevitability. There's no doubt, there's no hesitation, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about this. It is part of the design. So whenever we hook up, again, this is the underlying basis of what the Christ told us, that if we pray in his name and expecting, recognizing that our prayer has already been answered, it will be accomplished. Well, there's a great mystery behind that. And the mystery is called the law of inevitability. If we have asked for what God has already decided he wants to express on earth, the expression of that is inevitable. The reception of that is inevitable. In other words, if we pray for the healing of someone else and that person is ready to receive that healing, it will happen. Our prayers will be answered. We will be able to connect with a... If the person's not ready, then our prayer will be answered in the sense of helping that person become ready. The answer is inevitable. Its application may be still in doubt, but the invocation is inevitable. We do not ask vainly of God. It can't happen. If we actually are able to contact the divine force, what we ask will be granted. If we're responding to the inevitability of divine will. That's the law of inevitability. All right, so we come then to the culmination, the Three of Swords. The Three Swords are intersecting perfectly in a pink heart. So we started with a pink hat, and then we went to a pink globe, and now we have a pink heart. So three of the top cards here in the upper part of the spread are all pink. And down with the tower, there's a pink moon. So we're covering that element of affection very nicely here. The three swords represent the apex of the triangle, the equilateral triangle. As we work with that, we begin to understand that if we're able to define the apex correctly, the force of perfection and inevitability is ours to work with. So the more we work with that to resolve the imbalance of the pairs of opposites, the more we are able to handle that effectively. And we begin to understand that our appearance on earth is itself an inevitable event of creation. Nothing accidental here. Physical conception may have been accidental, depending upon your parents and their attitudes, but not at unconscious levels. You were approaching, your spirit approached and said, yeah, I think I could take on those parents. If they'll have me, if I can get them in bed at the same time, I could maybe get something going here. All right, so the point is that your soul, from the point of view of the soul, your life on earth is inevitable. Your series of lives on earth, inevitable. Your work as you learn to respond to the inner patterns guiding you becomes inevitable. The opportunities to serve become inevitable. And in doing all this, we're harnessing divine force and creating miracles on earth, the miracle being ourselves. Okay, I'm going to stop there and entertain comments and questions. Any comments or questions about the law of inevitability? I know there will be some. It's inevitable.
No,
it is now. Dorothy is fulfilling my prophecy.
Yes. I was thinking in terms of if there is a problem and it's being solved, so there's a problem that's solved, then is it inescapable that the next stage is to learn something new, and that will be another problem.
Well, if you want to call it a problem, you could easily, as easily
or
call it another
opportunity. Yes.
What you have here is the higher turn of the spiral, or as they say esoterically, the next turn of the screw. Life works in a spiral motion, and so you learn one lesson, and it's just, if you think of the yin-yang symbol, the way the circle is divided into the two halves, there's motion there. So the resolution of one problem becomes the seed of the next learning lesson, or the next step forward in growth.
At the next turn of the spiral.
Yeah.
At the higher turn.
Right. And if you look at this from the issue of the spiral, then as the spiral goes up the mountain, or the inverted screw, or whatever you want to call it, the circles get narrower and narrower, but also at higher levels. It's the thread of the screw from when the screw is upside down, with the head at the bottom and the tip at the top. And so, yes, the seed of maturity learned in one phase of life becomes a seed for the next step forward in maturity. We view those as problems. As long as we view those phases as problems, we are condemning ourselves to strain, worry, anxiety, and so on. The moment we start to see them as learning opportunities, we say, this is not such a bad system after all. And instead of escaping your problems, you decide to take them head on and invoke the ideal. And in invoking the ideal, you're bringing more of the seed of the archetype into life, and you're working with it. And so, of course, that creates a new spiral. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's very helpful. Thank you.
Good. Other comments or questions? The law of inevitability. I think I can safely say that it is inevitable that you'll think of your questions about 2 minutes or 5 minutes or whatever after we end this session. Anybody else? Okay, well, that's it for tonight. Thank you. And we'll do this again next week, because we're playing catch-up here. All right. So, good night, and thank you.